Football Weekly.
Manchester United seal the title, and while Rafa Benitez couldn't sound more bitter, if he were the German word for please, we here in the pod salute Sir Alex and his purple rain. Meantime, though, there's a lot to talk about with the battle at the bottom. As we await Portsmouth Sunderland, it's down in Albion, and Newcastle have browned off an ailing once again. Abroad, while Barca rock in Las Ramblas and Inter party in Piazza del Duomo, who, we ask, will be breaking out the Steins and Umpar bands as German champions in the Bundesliga, top Teuton reports. There's Post, Scottish news with Kirk Broadfoot's exploding breakfast and Kyle Lafferty's dive of shame, and happy talky, happy talk. We salute the girls' Wembley win. All that in Football Weekly, as hot off the press as Raikkonen's freshly ironed undies. On board today, we have Raphael Honigstein, who's put his work away for a second. Raphael, you're busy typing up a tip-top Bundesliga report.
Yeah, the monkeys that I employ in the basement didn't deliver today.
No.
So I have to write up myself.
Yeah. Kevin McCarra.
Hi, James.
And continuing the multicultural theme, Barry Glendening.
Top of the morning to you.
Indeed so. And to all you listeners, wherever you may be. Manchester United fans, we salute you. Your team is really, 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 really good. Kevin McCarry, you were there for what was a less than enthralling way to clinch the title, a 0-0 draw with Arsenal. They didn't have a single shot on target in the entire game.
No one seemed to have no intention of doing so in case they hurt their feet by kicking the ball too hard ahead of the European Cup final. It only dawned on me afterwards. They had every reason to take it easy at the weekend.
Is this because they've seen how successful Chelsea were at basically just shutting down Barcelona by not coming out to play, and this is what they're going to do in Rome?
Well, I mean, that's probably a bit harsh, but they've scored 67 league goals this season, and that's as low a number as they've ever had when they won the Premier League under Ferguson. They did it way back in the early 90s, 67 again.
So this is far from a swashbuckling United side we're looking
at. But it is done on purpose. It's not because they're somehow failing. Maybe they're failing to the extent that Berbatov might have scored more and Tevez might have scored more than five. But generally speaking, they've gone kind of all continental since Carlos Queiroz's arrival a few years ago. And the emphasis now is keep the ball, have men behind the ball, don't take too many risks. They're such good players that I still enjoy watching them, but it's certainly not the swashbuckling United of old. However, they're now going for, and may well get, a second consecutive Champions League after all those years when they seem to struggle and get court endless disappointment in the European Cup. So it's working.
All right. Raphael Honigstein, would you care to salute Manchester United?
I think they're absolutely awesome squad. Not sure about the starting 11, not sure anyone is, just how good they are, but the squad is fantastic. And I think they are huge favourites against Barcelona. I wouldn't be surprised if it's 3-0 and really, really, really one-sided final. I think they're that much better. The only problem, I think, ironically, I see for them is that they've have to bridge these 10 days somehow, because I think we saw in the Euros a lot of teams who took it really easy in their third game, rested players, then couldn't get the rhythm back and then were knocked out. Holland, I think it happened to one or two other teams who did the same. And you know, whether they'll have the intensity of not doing anything for 10 days will be interesting to see.
Barcelona will have that same problem as well, though. Getting back to the Premier League, then I'll just romp through the rest of this. Arsene Wenger and his rail job sounds interesting comments. Well, we'll talk to Sid about that a little bit later on. How about Rafael Benitez and his unwillingness to perform the simple act of saying congratulations? He can congratulate the team, but he can't congratulate the manager. What does that say about Rafa's mindset? Or do you think it's fair enough after Sir Alex was such a tit over this business of how he'd shown disrespect to Blackburn, blah, blah, blah?
I think Benitez has looked very closely at championship-winning managers like Mourinho, Ferguson and Wenger's realised that being a bad loser is a prerequisite to actually winning anything. So he's just emulating his more successful colleagues.
It's also the question as to what's his audience. I think it's not the UK at whole as a large. It's Merseyside. No trophy this season, but the team has got better and he wants to rally the troops. Liverpool, it's actually quite pathetic, this thing about Manchester United aren't necessarily the best. When it got to the serious stage of the season, Liverpool won 2 out of 7 games, and it says in the Guardian, ending up with a 2-0 loss at Middlesbrough. So why he thinks his team is in some sense arguably superior, I don't know. Mm. His team knocked out comfortably by Chelsea in the Champions League, Man U in the final. It's just a nonsensical argument by him.
How far away do you think they are from actually really competing with Manchester United next year?
Not far at all. Probably another four would be good. I think the difficulty is that Man U have literally dozens of players who are first team players, and other teams don't have that, and if injury finds them out. But even Arsenal, I think, with one or two telling signings, would be a danger. But over the course of the season, it's the sheer resources Alex Ferguson has that really count.
Yeah, I agree with Kevin. I think, first of all, Liverpool benefited from the fact that United always had to play catch-up from the second game of the season when they're playing in the Super Cup, then had to go to Japan for that World Cup, whatever it's called. And they were always...
They had a cushion that made them comfortable.
They're always ahead, and United weren't really playing well. But then, of course, as soon as they put any sort of series of results together, then they took the top of the table again. And I think Kevin is absolutely right. Yesterday, Benitez made the point that if we can keep Gerrard and Torres playing, then we've got a chance. You couldn't imagine Ferguson saying something like that about two particular players, because they've shown already they can do it with Cristiano Ronaldo. They did it without Rio Ferdinand for large parts of the season. So the difference in class is still quite wide.
I think last season Benitez said that if Liverpool could improve their results against top four sides, they would win the league. And they did improve their results against top four sides, but their results against bottom four sides, or teams in the lower half of the table, is what cost them the title. But I think Benitez... he's getting a lot of criticism for his churlishness and inability or refusal to congratulate Ferguson, but I can see where he's coming from, because Ferguson did accuse him of being sort of mentally deranged after the Blackburn incident, and there's a pair of them in it, and they're both standing side by side on the perch now, the famous perch, and I think it's only a matter of time before Fergie sort of draws back the elbow and knocks Rafa off in next season.
Hmm. We possibly ought to mention Chelsea as well. I mean, depends what Abramovich does, I suppose, but if you watch them yesterday, they are a seriously good team when they play like that. I think there's probably some younger players required to freshen things up, but maybe the money will be available.
Their manager is far too classy, though, to ever win anything. Considering what a lovely man he seems to be.
The FA Cup's not counted. He wins the FA Cup next.
Well, that's possible. That is possible. But anyway, interesting to see how much respect and admiration attachment he's inspired in such a brief time, doing not really that much of a miracle, taking over a good side with a couple of key players coming back from injury and doing really rather well with them. But there you go. Well done to Gus Hiddink for being a lovely chap. Meanwhile, at the other end of the table, all sorts of drama in the relegation battle, of course. West Bromwich Albion now confirmed as going down. Shame. Lovely club. Well run. Lovely fans. Anything else you'd like to add to that, Barry?
Yeah, just not very good at football.
Some bits of the football they're good at. It's the bit about putting the ball in the net.
And keeping it out of the net at the other end. But it was nice to see the West Brom fans serenading and cheering Tony Mowbray last night. Tony Mowbray seems to be an absolutely lovely bloke. But it looks as if he'll keep his job. So maybe it's the chairman. I mean, the chairman of... West Brom, Jeremy Peace, has now overseen three promotions and three followed by relegations, and they only look to be a half decent striker and a couple of defenders away from having stayed up, so you'd wonder why he didn't invest in those kind of players at Christmas and try to keep the team up. It would have possibly involved going into debt, but you needn't have bankrupted the club or anything. If you spent 8-10 million, he could have got a couple of defenders in.
Yeah. Speaking of forwards, I see they scored 26 goals at home, which is absolutely terrific. You have to go up to the midpoint in the table to find another team that scored that many. So maybe there is something to his case that they're an attractive, creative team.
How many goals did Borough get at home?
17 so far.
Right, okay.
Assuming you can trust the Guardians league table.
Well, okay, we'll go with it. Borough, meantime, are now all but dead and buried, and you could... I think there was an acceptance of that in Gareth Southgate's face come the final whistle against Aston Villa. Newcastle as well, after emerging from the bottom three last Monday, right back in it after Fulham's victory at St James's Park. Now, to what extent is this the fault of Howard Webb?
And not giving the goal at the weekend.
Yes.
Well, I thought it was a poor decision. I think there are bodies in the goal mouth. They can't dematerialise. There wasn't an intentional foul or any... professional wrongdoing going on. But of course, I mean, Alan Shearer didn't make too much of it. I think he realises that Newcastle's problems are far, far greater than that. I saw them beating Borough the other week, and, you know, they looked like a slow, plodding team then, even though they applied a lot of pressure. And there's nothing Alan Shearer can do about that. The main hope for him will be that Aston Villa continue faltering.
Mm. Well, especially because they're playing them next... yes, as you say, sorry.
Yeah, and then Hull, of course, have got Manchester United and this whole debate about what kind of team Sir Alex Ferguson will pick.
What kind of team will Sir Alex Ferguson pick?
A weak one, but I think better that than playing United's full-strength team with all of them protecting themselves ahead of a European Cup final 4 days later.
Right.
I think young, frisky Manchester United players...
Well, maybe trying to catch the manager's eye.
Yeah. I think Hull would be better off playing the full United team. I find this is a totally spurious argument about United sending out a weakened team. It's Alex Ferguson's responsibility to do so. He's the manager of Manchester United. He's not in charge of the integrity of the Premier League.
Take that, conventional wisdom. Right. Well, I tell you what, while we're on the subject of Newcastle's defeat at home to Fulham, Mike65IE says, while the Monday pod shall no doubt be full of rumination regarding Manchester United winning the league and equaling Liverpool's tally, could they put a moment aside for arguably the manager of the season, Roy Hodgson, who in the space of 17 months has taken a side all but relegated to the edge of the Europa League. Football's promised land, of course.
Yeah, I mean, even though he's been very lucky with injuries, even with that, you would never have anticipated Fulham being as high as they are, seventh. And although Tottenham, what, 2 points behind, it could yet change around in the last day. However, Spurs are away at Liverpool, so maybe Liverpool round off a victory and that will preserve Fulham in the Europa League.
Right. I mean, for manager of the year, how about Tony Pulis then?
Yeah, Pulis or Hodgson, either or.
I think Fulham have been absolutely sensational. If you look at the resources and the players that they actually got,
right,
with how much they achieved to come seventh or to possibly, you know, stay in seventh position, is just absolutely amazing. I confidently predicted them to be relegated at the end of the season, so I'm just about 10 places out.
I've only been to Stoke once. I must say I really enjoyed it and thought it was a tremendous sort of combat of exciting, direct football, I know, but exciting place to be for a football match. And even last week, Stoke, of course, actually won an away game by beating Hull. So it wasn't purely a matter of being strong at home. I think Tony Pulis has done brilliantly.
Still, eh? No time to debate that particular little nugget now, as we're going to head on to the European efforts at, you know, championships and stuff. Spain, Germany, that kind of thing.
Football Weekly from Guardian.co.uk.
Right, well then let's begin our continental roundup with Sidlo in Spain, where Barcelona have just sewn up the title after a three-year title drought.
Well, Barcelona haven't so much up the title as Real Madrid have done it for them.
Right.
Real Madrid were beaten 3-2 by Villarreal on Saturday night, which meant that Barcelona were champions. And it also meant they went to Mallorca on Sunday with a whole load of youth teamers, played mostly subs in their side, and actually lost. Now, I wonder if Real Madrid might be thinking to themselves, hang on a minute, Barcelona over the last 2 weeks have had one draw and one defeat. If we'd actually carried on playing, it would be only 2 points.
Well, yeah, but they would have played their first
team. Of course,
team.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. Of course, they would have picked up more points if they needed to. But Barcelona, the one thing they were playing for, and they've actually admitted this themselves.
What are you eating, Sid, if I can ask?
I'm sorry, I just swallowed down my last little bit of... I'd love to say an apple just to try and make Barney jealous, but there's actually a piece of cake.
Spanish cake? Torta?
Torta de Santiago, which is business. Nice. It is the king of cakes.
Well, I don't know about that. The absence of any form of chocolate in it would surely disqualify it from that title. But
that's true. And also the absence of dulce de leche, which is another nice touch to cakes sometimes.
Ooh. Well, interesting. Listen. Barcelona won the title. Can we have some obligatory stories of crazy Latins jumping in fountains and stuff?
Yeah, and some arrests and a few things destroyed down the Ramblers and that sort of stuff. The amazing thing is, of course, that Barcelona seem to have been permanently in party mode for the last week or so. They went out and partied after the 6-2. They went out and partied after the victory against Chelsea, or the draw against Chelsea, which put them through. They then went out and partied when Real Madrid blew it because they considered themselves to have won the league.
Would you mind not using the word party as a verb, please? It really annoys me.
Is party not a verb?
Not in my world.
They had a party.
You attend a party. You don't party.
Don't you? Okay. Maybe we should go down the normal British media routine, as they always have at New Year's Eve, and call them revellers. I love that word. Revellers. What a bollocks.
What did you do last night? I revelled.
Yeah, exactly. I had a packet of those chocolates. Some of orange, some of chocolate, some of Maltesers.
Right. I always found them a bit of a mixed bag, the revellers.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I'm not joking. I genuinely prefer to know what's happening
Yeah, same here. It's like it is Forrest Gump, isn't it? Life is like a box of chocolates. That's a lie. A box of chocolates has a little card that tells you what each one is. Life is like a bag of Revels, is true.
Right.
But the thing is, you could tell which Revel you're about to eat just by looking at the shape.
Right. Not always, because sometimes the bastard coffee one was lurking ready to get you.
Yes. Yes.
And no one likes coffee. That was just a waste of a chocolate, wasn't it? No one likes the coffee one.
Right. I'm going to disappoint listeners everywhere by getting back on message. Sorry, Raphael, did you have anything to add?
No.
Some German-based confectionery anecdote? No, okay.
I was just going to sing the Beastie Boys song.
Oh, which song was that?
You Gotta Fight.
For your right.
For your right
to party.
No, you can't. You can't. You can't, apparently.
All right.
They were wrong to say that.
They were wrong. Right. To have a party, they could have said that.
Yeah. Right. Well, something that did about Revel, wasn't it?
Revel. Kevin McCarran.
Sorry, pardon me.
Outstanding.
Revel without a cause.
Right. Or without a pause, even, for all the hardcore fans out there. Yeah, boy. Etc. Now, in part five of today's pod, we'll be getting on to the rest of the Spanish news with Sid. Now, let's see. The race for fourth place. I'm going to try and sound excited about this. Diego Forlán stroked in a penalty. This was after a horrific Kun Agüero dive, Sid.
Yeah, a very good Kun Agüero dive, depending on how you want to look at it. And certainly one of the things, of course, is that quite often in Spanish football, dives are seen as a good thing rather than a bad thing. They're just another skill. Agüero came into the area, went round Cesar, and then threw himself to the ground and did that little thing where you kind of kick your leg out behind, trying to create some contact. There was no contact, but the referee swallowed it. Atletico Madrid climbed into a Champions League place thanks to a dive, a penalty that should never have been given, and a wonderful victory. But it would be unfair to say it's only thanks to that, because they were very much the better side against Valencia.
What about the Arsene Wenger to Real Madrid story then, Sid?
Well, this is a really interesting one. Arsene Wenger has been, for a long time, the preferred choice of Florentino Pérez. He's very, very well liked in Spain. He's very well respected, not just by Pérez, but by Jorge Valdano, who looks like he's going to be Pérez's kind of director general at Real Madrid. Of course, he's French, the same as Zinedine Zidane, although he's not really French, because I think when he was born, the part of France he was in was actually Germany, but that's by the by. And it's definitely, he's definitely the first choice for Real Madrid. The thing I can't add to this, unfortunately, is the extent to which Arsene Wenger would genuinely want to go to Real Madrid and be involved in that project. Now, I know this weekend he said it would be an interesting project. It could be. That was just an empty platitude. But certainly, from the outside at least, it looks like Wenger's getting increasingly irritated with the situation at Arsenal. So maybe this is genuinely a possibility. But one thing is for sure, he's Real Madrid's first choice, or at least he's Florentino's first choice for Real Madrid.
Even though he's a very independent kind of manager, he's not used to working with people who make all sorts of kind of decisions above him in the way that Real Madrid usually do.
Well, I think this is why Arsene Wenger might actually find it difficult to say yes. I think Real Madrid will try and encourage him, because they believe he's a fantastic coach, and I'm sure they believe that there's some way of working around it. And if they say, look, we're going to buy players, but it's all going to be, you know, based on consensus, you're going to agree with it and so on, they believe they'll probably be able to persuade him. There's another thing as well, which is, well, when you're trying to persuade someone, frankly, you lie to them. They'll tell him he's going to get all sorts of freedom and he's going to have all sorts of power, and then ultimately he may not have it. But I don't think that's something that's a problem for Real Madrid at this stage. I think it's something that could be a problem for him if he doesn't believe that he's going to get the power that he would normally demand.
Okay, Slasher, who you're playing football with, I think, on the 22nd.
I've not yet had an email or anything.
Have you not? Slasher, you need to post in and we'll forward that. Any reaction, asked Slasher, in Spain to the travails of Aragonés in Turkey? Fenerbahce out of the Champions League in the group stages. Might well not qualify for next year's Champions League and just got battered 4-2 by Besiktas in the Turkish Cup final.
Yeah, and it looks like Aragonés is not long for Turkish football, that he may well be coming back to Spain. And the possibility, the very strong possibility, is that he'll have some sort of role at Atletico Madrid, perhaps as a kind of sporting director or something like that. García Pitarch, who's the current sporting director, is widely seen as a bit of a failure. He, of course, famously is the guy that bought Rafa Benitez a sofa when he wanted a lamp at Valencia, and has failed again at Atletico Madrid, or at least the belief is that he's failed again at Atletico Madrid. So Luis Aragonés might be brought in as some sort of sporting director there.
Sid, fantastic stuff. We look forward to speaking to you on Thursday, unless there's anything else we should know about.
Well, it's been just a weekend where we're sort of still waiting for things to be tied up. I suppose the big one is down at the bottom. It now looks like Sporting Gijón or Osasuna to take the final relegation place. And the thing that makes that amusing is that Sporting Gijón won 2-1, their first win in 9 games, thanks to a fantastic diving header from a Malaga player who headed it into his own net for them.
right, okay, excellent. So further news on Thursday then.
Yep, speak to them.
Thanks, Sid.
Cheers.
Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hello. I tell you what, it's been sewn up in Italy, it's been sewn up in Spain and the Premier League too. The Bundesliga, though, wide open.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, it's not. It is. You've got three teams within 2 points. Not as wide open as it was before.
No. Slightly less wide. The consensus now is that it's actually won by Wolfsburg because they've got fantastic goal difference, unassailable net department, because they beat Hannover 5-0 away on Saturday. Yet another fantastic showing from Grafit and Dzeko up front, who've got scored 51 goals together this season. Absolutely unbelievable.
Edin Dzeko, Cable 1973, was posting in demanding to know if he's going to be on the move this summer.
Well, he's definitely being linked with everybody and their dog, and quite rightly so. He's 23 years old. He's absolutely sensational in terms of his goal scoring, but also his link-up play is fantastic. I mean, he is really the secret, I think, of this. In Germany, they talk about a magic triangle between him, Grafit, and Misimovic. I'm talking about on the pitch. Dzeko makes everything happen because he is the one holding up the ball, playing people on. He's just absolutely wonderful player, tall, elegant, can do absolutely everything, very young, and very likely to move as well, I think, which is the sad bit in all this fantastic news for Wolfsburg, because they've already lost their manager. Felix Magath will be off to Schalke, and there's a very good chance they will lose all the three best players as well, just on the day or in the season where they qualified for the Champions League for the first time ever, which is really sad.
They've got Volkswagen's money behind them. Can't they hang on to these players?
They can within reason. I think, you know, certain players will get so big or will get so many interesting offers, and that money perhaps won't even be the deciding factor. I mean, they might be able to match somebody else's offer, but the allure of playing for a really top club, you know, for somebody like Grafit, who's 29, who's really been a late starter. Was selling bin bags 8 years ago in his native Brazil, door to door. You know, you come to a guy like him and say you can play for Valencia, for example, and he'll say, yeah, I mean, fantastic.
Sorry, was he selling bin bags or bean bags?
No, bin bags, right. Yeah.
So you're saying if another club make him an offer he can't refuse, then he might...
yes.
He might just make a move.
I think the crucial point about amid all this gloom and foreboding about their future downfall is that they are all but nailed on for the title, their first ever title, and you know, they only need 1 point.
Well, they play Bremen.
But the point at home to Bremen. But the point is that Werder, of course, will play in UEFA Cup on Wednesday and will be hungover either way afterwards. And already we got an indication from their game against Karlsruhe that they're not really bothered anymore. They're in the German Cup final, the UEFA Cup final, and I think a game against Wolfsburg where they themselves play for absolutely nothing. Of course, if it was up to them, they'd rather see Wolfsburg win it than Stuttgart and Bayern, who are also still in the running, theoretically.
Glad you mentioned the UEFA Cup final, which is, of course, this Wednesday. Optimism in Germany for Werder's chances?
Within means. I mean, they are severely handicapped by the fact that they're missing Diego, of course, who's so important for them. You can't really overstate the relevance of his and his goals and his playmaking abilities. Also, Hugo Almeida's out. Also, Per Mertesacker at the back is out. He's really good. Naldo might not be fit either. So while Hamburg were really done by Bremen in the sense that they knocked them out of three competitions effectively, they did their best to ruin Werder's chances in the final by getting both Diego and Naldo Almeida suspended with after some really sort of stupid handbag type actions.
All right, okay. Well, that game came up on Wednesday, of course. And listen, we're a little bit out of time here, but a very, very quick roundup, if you could, for DiscoBot 1000. He wants you to talk about the relegation battle in the Bundesliga, particularly Gladbach's potential great escape. Cheers.
Gladbach's great escape is still on the cards because they are still clear off relegation in 15th spot. But they were beaten 5-0 by Leverkusen on Saturday, and they could still go down. I think they're likely to stay up the way it looks, but it's not 100% over. And the more incredible great escape would happen if Karlsruhe were to come back, because they were really all but out well, throughout the season, they were bottom of the table. Nobody really gave them any chance. And they themselves, last week or the week before last, started about life in the second division and how they're going to have to rebuild and etc. But now, after beating Bremen, who really clearly weren't interested in their game, 3-1, in Bremen, Karlsruhe now have a real final, so to speak, to play for, because if they beat Hertha at home, they've got a very, very decent chance of at least making it to 16th spot, which entitles you to a playoff against the third place team in the Bundesliga 2.
Brilliant. Okay, nice one. Just going to go on to some posts, but Barry, there's something you want to mention.
No, there isn't.
Yes, there is. You just said we haven't mentioned.
Great link.
No.
Well, it's just when I saw the look of horror on your face when Rafa mentioned the UEFA Cup and you suddenly realised that the final was this Wednesday, which sort of pretty much shows how low the tournament has plummeted in recent years, that we'd forgotten all about it in our morning meeting. Poor old Roman Bednar had a rough weekend.
Well, he had a rough weekend, allegedly. Well, no, he did have a rough weekend.
He did score.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was something else you wanted to talk about, apart from the alleged drug shame of Bromwich Albion player.
Yes, you can't trust your drug dealer not to record your surreptitious deals and sell his story to a paper. Who can you trust? But there was also the fisticuffs between Jamie Carragher and Alvaro Arbeloa.
Yes.
Which, you know, were quite interesting, considering Liverpool were playing for nothing.
Right.
Nothing at stake, and they were 2-0 up and cruising, and it was a defensive error, I think.
Well,
Arbeloa wasn't somewhere where he should have been.
He wasn't getting back quickly enough.
It's my duty to point out this is nothing compared to Craig Levein punching his centre-half teammate unconscious in a pre-season friendly with Hearts. Craig Levein, one punch, Graham Hogg out for the count. A dispute over who is marking whom at a corner kick, I believe, in a pre-season friendly.
Good
so
God.
Carragher's got miles to go yet.
I'm excited by his enthusiasm and commitment to the game, but I did wonder why, for example, Arbeloa could have gone up and shaken him around and threatened to hit him after he'd gifted that ball to Di Michele last weekend at Upton Park. Carragher, I mean, it's not as if he's immune to making errors himself. But anyway, there you go.
Well, apparently now they've kissed and made up.
Well, that's lovely. Post. Speaking of kissing players and that, Fat Captain says, following Danny Baker's admission of a crush on Dimitar Berbatov earlier in the season, could we have a rundown of which players the pod team finds mysteriously attractive? Barry, I think you'd have to kick this one off.
I don't find any footballers mysterious. The only man I have ever had a crush on is Johnny Depp, and continue to have a crush on him.
Really?
So if he's listening, I'll be the catcher. I'm not ashamed to admit that Johnny Depp is the most beautiful human being I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah. And he seems like a good laugh as well.
Right.
So that's who my man crushes on.
Okay. Kevin, have you got a Premier League man crush out there? You're looking through some squad lists. What have you got?
The squad list.
Throw some names up. Wheater? What do you think?
But Richard Dunn, obviously.
Richard Dunn. Yeah, I don't know. I've sprung this question on everybody, and I probably should have forewarned you, because there are definitely some very, you know, and a lot of these players, they seem lovely chaps. They take care of themselves. So but what's not to like, I say?
Raul is quite good looking.
Raul? No, I don't like him.
Smouldering Latin looks.
Big nose.
I think, you got your Maldinis and stuff like that, you know. Mancini as well. Mm. These are all very, very sexy guys. but anyway, speaking of which, I see that Paolo Bandini is now in the docking station over there, so very momentarily. Oh, Joe67 says, just wondering if we'd seen the brutal assault on a certain Kyle Lafferty yet. Did you see that?
I don't know.
Rangers Aberdeen, you've seen it, haven't you, Barry?
I have seen it, yes.
Shocking.
Lafferty and Aberdeen's Charlie Mulgrew went head-to-head on the touchline, sort of squaring up to each other, and Lafferty then just put his hands to his face and flung himself backwards and rolled around in the ground in full agony. He hadn't been touched. And Charlie Mulgrew got sent off for it. And
the Rangers went on to win the game against Aberdeen.
Yeah, well, Lafferty walked away, winked to one of his teammates as in, ha-ha, look what I did. And Rangers went on to win the game 2-1. I mean, Lafferty's antics were disgraceful. He should be thoroughly ashamed of himself. But he's a very limited player. He averages about a goal in 9, so he doesn't have much else to offer.
Right. What's going to happen to him?
Well, he can be suspended retrospectively. The Scottish Football Association can refer this, what he did, to its review panel, and they have the power to punish acts of simulation under the charge of improper conduct, it says here.
So, Rangers are talking about possibly finding them themselves.
Yeah, well, Walter Smith said afterwards he was disappointed with his behaviour and was going to have words with him. So.
Okay. As we say, Rangers now in the driving seat. They are at Dundee, though, which is a substantially tougher...
Dundee United.
Of course. Which is a substantially tougher fixture than Celtic's home game with Hearts on the final day of the season.
Yes, although, I mean, I was grateful yesterday. An Irish radio station phoned up, so I managed to talk to them for half an hour and avoided seeing much of Celtic's game with Hibernian, which was quite a pathetic 0-0 draw.
I see Gary Caldwell was giving out about how Hibernian wouldn't let Celtic score and how very inconsiderate that was.
I had to laugh because they think it wasn't good for football. It was going down well with the Hibs support, who were proud of their team for holding Rangers midweek and Celtic yesterday. So that was, I think, all credit to them. They're a big team and they defended well.
Finally, in Scottish news, Kirk Broadfoot. How is he getting on after being hospitalised from injuries caused by an exploding poached egg on Friday?
It was a microwave thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It blew up in his face, quite literally.
Apparently, he was inspecting his poached egg. Now, obviously, this again shows the complete lack of intelligence of footballers because, you know, what kind of moron would you have to be to suffer burns from an exploding egg? James Richardson, is there anything you'd like to tell us?
It's happened to me. I've been that egg inspector. Seriously, I once had some poached eggs prepared in a microwave by somebody, and I thought, that's fantastic. That really, because poached eggs are great. A little bit of pepper on top, lovely, on some warm buttered toast. And in a microwave, it's just that much more accessible as a breakfast dish, because a lot of times at breakfast, you don't want to go through the palaver of boiling up water, etc. So I tried it myself, and the fact is that you have to be very careful when you do it, because otherwise when you go to cut the egg, you may be unleashing a quite volcanic reaction from this...
So it's molten yolk and an albumin all over your face.
But I have to say, I don't know how you would get hospitalised from that unless you really, really were inspecting it very closely. And maybe kind of got singed.
Did I recommend a welder's mask kind of thing we're cutting?
Perhaps.
Yeah, that'd be safe.
In part three, Palamandini joins us. And also we get a mystery caller to discuss the Wembley excitements between Torquay and Cambridge. Paolo Bandini joins us now on Football Weekly. Inter have sealed the title. Yes.
Yes, yes, they have, James. Inter sealed the title without having to kick a ball this weekend because Milan lost at home to... Sorry, not at home. They lost away to Udinese on Saturday night. And, Inter are all basically sitting around watching this at their Pinatina training complex and they started celebrating and, you know, at which point Mourinho's like, right, off to bed now. And they all said, nope, we're going out celebrating in Piazza Duomo. And so they did.
And they had a hangover, as far as I could tell, for their game against Siena, which they won 3-0. Is that why Ibrahimovic was kept asking to be taken off?
Yeah, it was a slightly bizarre sight. I mean, you know, again, this is why Mourinho didn't want them to go out, is because they had the game on Sunday. And, you know, as they've all been saying now, it's a good thing it was an evening game rather than an afternoon game. But Ibrahimovic was one of a few out until, you know, 4-ish in the morning and certainly looked worse for wear and a bit grouchy. You know, he was sort of having a go at teammates. You know, Mario Balotelli at one point sort of rounded the keeper and scored for Inter's second, at which point... You know,
Brilliant ball from Luis Figo in his last ever game at the San Siro.
Indeed, he's about to retire. But, you know, at which point, you know, Balotelli having done all this work and rolled it in from about a yard out, Ibrahimovic is standing there going, well, why didn't you pass it to me, you know, on the other side of the goal behind a defender. And then he decided he wanted to come off and Mourinho was having none of it, going to even the point of use all three of his substitutions sort of one at a time right in front of Ibrahimovic, you know, with Ibrahimovic looking increasingly disdainful. The last of them being taking off Julio Cesar, the keeper, for Paolo Orlandoni, a 36-year-old reserve goalkeeper, which I think was you know, the icing on the cake. But, I mean, I think Ibrahimovic, you know, he was a bit sulky because he wasn't feeling as good, but he got his goal in the end, and now he's within one of the top scorers, so...
A lot of Inter fans I speak to complain about the fact that basically his tactic is let Maicon do lots of running and cross the ball. And as soon as Maicon got injured, that's when their season looked like it might come a cropper.
Yeah, but then, I mean, that's the whole point, though, isn't it? At that point when it looked like a season might come a cropper, I would argue that under Mancini, it probably would have.
Oh, right.
Whereas under Mourinho, it hasn't. And I think that, yes, they continue to rely far too heavily on a few individual talents. And then there's going to be a big question as to who they bring in this summer. They're basically, the word on the, you know, in the Italian papers now is they've already lined up deals for Genoa's Thiago Motta and Diego Milito, both of whom good players, you know, important players. But the real question will be, as it has been all season, what he's going to do about, you know, either bringing in this 4-3-3, which he's so sold on. But if he is, then how are you going to make the attack and midfield start looking like they're playing together? Because at the moment, you look like you've got two banks of three whenever he does that. Or if he's going to play 4-4-2, you know, is that 4-4-2 ever going to get him where he wants to get in Europe, which obviously is where, you know, most people are focused.
Other excitements this weekend, fourth-placed Fiorentina moved to just a point behind Juventus in the race for third place and guaranteed entry to the Champions League. They beat Sampdoria 1-0 at home with a win, with a goal from Alberto Gilardino. Ars Technica saying he was rubbish at Milan. Why is that? Is he actually a good player? Gilardino used to be a blinding player.
Gilardino has always been a good player. At Milan, I think he was, you know, again, you think of it as a mental issue. I think that at Milan, he constantly looked weighed down by the onus that was on him. You know, he was always playing in one strike formations there, and there was just an onus on him having, you know, he spent a lot of money to bring him in to be, you know, the next great hope for Milan, and it just didn't work out. And I don't think he ever got over that. And as soon as he went to Fiorentina, it was just like a burden was off his shoulders, and he's been scoring for fun ever since. And, you know, sometimes he is playing as the only man up front there, and he's doing fine with it. It's just, I think certain players can't necessarily handle that pressure.
Indeed so. And he's back with the manager with whom he did great things at Parma, Prandelli, of course. I mentioned that they're 1 point behind Juventus. Juventus now 7 games winless. A 2-2 draw at home to Atalanta this weekend. And that was played behind closed doors after the racist chanting against Balotelli.
Yeah. It was a funny game because they went 1-0 down very early on, and then they came back to take a 2-1 lead and looked like they were going to set up without any problems. But they're just so bad at the back of them. I would say that very much worth seeing for those of you, the internet at your disposal for YouTube, Cristiano Zanetti's second for Juventus was absolutely stunning. It was a sort of ball looping out of defence, and he just, about 30 yards from goal, just first time, just cracks it straight back into the top corner. It's a brilliant goal.
Ancelotti, according to today's Gazzetta dello Sport, it's confirmed now that he will be joining Chelsea, and the announcement will be made on the 30th.
Yeah, that basically looks to be the case. Yeah, I think that's a consensus now that Ancelotti's on his way, and it, worryingly, I would say, it looks like Van Basten may well be on the mound on his way in.
But it's interesting because this was debated on the Post this week, and Ty has posted in saying, while he is undoubtedly a talented manager, I remain convinced that his attractiveness to Chelsea this year and last lies in his relative comfort in dealing with interfering owners. And he has handled that. I mean, he handled Berlusconi and all his various outbursts with the...
But the point is, though, it's you know, but you're paying an awful lot of money for just for someone to be a yes man. I think the point is that he may be a bit of a yes man, but he's also someone who hopefully the Chelsea players will look at and say, well, this is a man who's won European Champions League, he's won the Champions League, he's won European titles, so we respect him. Because I think the big problem you're going to have at Chelsea is you've got to have someone who comes in and the players don't think he's a clown.
Let's say there was some money from Abramovich. Who do you think, if there's one player he could buy from Serie A, who would he bring with him to?
Who would he bring with him from Serie A?
Kaká.
Well, I think, yes, from his Milan team,
that's a bit expensive.
It would be the obvious player, yeah, it would obviously be Kaká. I mean, from his Milan team, you know, there's not a lot of players you'd look at and think that he'd necessarily want to bring with him.
Beckham.
I genuinely think that the player to get is going to be excited. People are going to be excited about in the next few years in Italy is Mario Balotelli. I think he is getting just better by the week at the moment. He looks like so fast, so explosive. But I can't imagine that would happen.
Fantastic stuff there from Paolo Bandini. To finish off Football Weekly Extra in Orbit name today, let's just get a quick reaction to the exciting events at Wembley, the big final of the Blue Square Premier. Torquay United against Cambridge United. One team could return to the Football League. Which was it? To tell us more, here's Rebecca Lowe.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you? How was your weekend at Wembley? Were you drenched in bubbly? What happened?
No bubbly, thank God, this weekend. I made it quite clear to both teams that whichever one wins, I would appreciate not this week being completely drenched in champagne, having to put another new coat in for dry cleaning bill. But it was a great day at Wembley and good win for Torquay. And good afternoon. Thanks, James. Did you watch?
Torquay, second straight year that Cambridge have seen themselves pipped at the post in terms of the return to the Football League. But what about the Gulls? Are they going to be a force in League Two?
Oh, your knowledge is immense. I think they could do quite well, actually. Yeah, the manager, Paul Buckle's only been doing his job for a couple of years, but he's proved to a lot of people that he's got an immense amount of talent. He's taken the team to a third and fourth round in the FA Cup in the last couple of years, FA Trophy final, playoff final as well, which obviously they won yesterday. And they've got some really, really good players. A couple of players who might... Well, certainly their central midfielder and captain, Chris Hargreaves, who turned 37 the other day, he told me yesterday he probably wouldn't be playing next season in League Two. So he's got to find a few reinforcements. I think they'll be all right. And I don't actually think there's a massive difference between League Two and certainly top 10 in the Blue Square Premier. So I think they'll more than hold their own, just like Exeter did, of course, got promoted, and just like Aldershot did and Morecambe and Dagenham before them. So, yeah, I think they'll be fine, James. What do you think?
Yeah, James,
Barry's got a question.
Rebecca Barry here. I'm just.
Hi, Barry.
You say you warned the teams not to drench you in champagne like the Cambridge players did the previous week. Surely that's like a red rag to a bull. And I noticed yesterday, because I was watching, unlike Mr. Richardson, that you increased the risk of total disaster by wearing white.
Yeah, but then you think about it, though. Well, yeah, I know what you mean. But I sort of think that at least with white, it. Well, no, you're right. On reflection, yeah, you're right. You're right. It would have gone totally wrong, wouldn't it?
Well, it would have gone totally right. Way to go to take one for the programme.
Rebecca, can I ask you about this thing? We talked about this, the not all that great a difference in standard. A team like Luton, who've gone down because of the huge penalty punishment, are they liable to struggle to adapt? Will they be amazed how difficult it is?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You only have to look at the likes of Wrexham and Mansfield, who came down last season, both probably not quite as big clubs as Luton, but still established league clubs who came down, and they've both really struggled. They both finished, Wrexham, I think, finished mid-table, and Mansfield's almost 14th or 15th, I think. Oxford have really had problems trying to get back. Cambridge have obviously had problems. You know, these sides are really finding it difficult because it's only one up, you see. There's only one automatic promotion place. So you can be, you know, the next best team in the league by distance and then lose out in the playoffs on an offside goal or, you know, something like that. And then you can't get yourself back. And yes, I think Luton cannot take it for granted that they'll go straight back up again because history just dictates that it doesn't happen.
Brilliant stuff, Rebecca. Listen, I'll let you go because I think you've probably got to go on for some top TV style appointment later on, no?
Indeed, I'm on the way to work, James. I'll see you
what. What kind of work is that?
Some sort of football matter show that you and I try to present every Monday night. So I'll see you later. Make sure you're on time. I've got a meeting in about an hour, okay?
Yes. All right, then. Bye, Rebecca.
Bye, James. Right. Bye, everyone.
It's like a big, cosy family show business.
She really told you, didn't she?
What?
To be on time or else.
I'm not going to be on time.
She's the
pod
boss
comes
of you.
First, Barry.
Rebecca Law is the boss of you.
Yes. I'm her monkey. Yeah, yeah, indeed so. Now, or that might have been a dream I had last night. But anyway, now, moving along, that is indeed it for today's Football Weekly. I hope you enjoyed it, Barry, Kevin and Raphael. I certainly did. And many, many thanks to Ben and Pete. And you, the listener, will be back on Thursday with a reaction, naturally, to the UEFA Cup final and all sorts of other things too. Speak to you then.